listening to the Gridiron Growl Podcast from ChompTalk.com.
Corey, our current team, really proud of our guys, how we came out and played. Coming off last week's game, obviously an emotional, big physical game last week. Came back, had a great week of practice. Had to go play an excellent Tennessee team. I think you look at them, the physical group, physical on both sides of the ball. Some good athletes. Their quarterback, I thought, played pretty really well today, hitting some shots, creating big plays. They're an explosive type of offense, and you can see that they the improvements they've made in 1 year and what Coach Heupel's doing with them and how those guys play. And our guys had to come out and play hard for four quarters. And in the first half, I thought a couple mistakes here and there, and we went in and challenged the guys at halftime. It wasn't a big challenge. It was a challenge about if we want to be a great team, we got to play great every snap. We got to execute. Got to have attention to detail, do every small thing the right way. And I thought in the second half, we, for the most part, we really did that. We came out and played really well in the second half. That he did a great job making his reads, managing the offense, getting us in the right checks, into the right plays, decision making, and it was pretty good in the pass game. And then obviously scrambling. You look at what we have, 15 carries. That's probably a little much, but I think a bunch of them were kind of scrambles too, and him improvising. I don't know if we called many direct quarterback runs in the game tonight. So I think, he had some runs and scrambles, some reads, and had some explosive. But I think it shows how he's managing things. Yeah, I think he understands, though. I think, one of the things, those guys, and give Garrett McGee credit with those guys, just their maturity and how to understand the position, how to handle the game, be happy for each other, know the situations that we're in, know when I'm ready to play, how to prepare myself. Knowing Anthony, he wants to be out there playing. But I think also having the maturity of understanding, hey, I'm dangerous when, these are some things that make me dangerous. And if I'm not doing those things, better get myself to be 100%. And so I can go do those things. Because, anytime you deal with that, like I keep saying, all of a sudden I'm with the trainers. And we go from hey, he can back up for us and really not miss a game as a backup, to if we had pressed it, he could have been out for 6 weeks. And now we don't, not only is, do we not, now we're looking at it, or we lose our backup, we lose everything about it. So we were very fortunate. He didn't have to go in the game the last 2 weeks, and he'll be ready to go. I thought played excellent. I thought Todd did a great job with getting the guys ready to play. They're an explosive offense, tough offense to play. You look in the first half, we had a couple of missed tackles, which allowed them to keep a drive alive, and then that one touchdown was a missed tackle, and then we had a blown coverage in your man coverage, cover your man. It's not like we were being real complex with it all, just had a missed assignment there. But I think you saw what Todd and his guys were able to do. The adjustments they made at halftime for us to come in and pitch the shutout in the second half, and really since they hit a, whatever it was, a 75-yard blown coverage bomb, and they don't score again. And so I think Todd and his staff did an amazing job.
You're listening to the Gridiron Growl Podcast from ChompTalk.com.
Welcome to the Gridiron Growl Podcast. Mark McLeod with you. You can follow me on Twitter at McLeod Live, MCLEOD Live. Of course, you can log on to the ChompTalk.com site. Catch Brian Fox Jr.'s stuff. Of course, he's the founder, the editor of Chomp Talk, and the guy that makes this happen with the Gridiron Growl Podcast. I am joined by co-host Jake Hitt. Jake, how you doing?
I'm good. How are you? I'm Jake Hitt. You can follow me at Jake_Hitt06, HITT06, and see my stuff on Inside the Gators. I also work for Chomp Talk a little bit, too. I'm doing all right, Mark. How are you?
Doing well. We're going to talk about a little bit about this Florida-Tennessee win. I think we'll go positive-negative. How about we kind of do that, because we're seeing some things with the Florida football team now, a little different, obviously, with a team that's banged up. You're seeing a few more faces out there. So we'll touch on that a little bit. We'll touch on a few things and then really look at Kentucky. Kentucky did a nice job on South Carolina defensively. They really did. Kentucky offense wasn't much to write home about, but boy, that defense, they held South Carolina, I noticed, to 51 plays. I think they only had 58 yards rushing. So the Kentucky defense, you know, according to some of the players postgame, but certainly according to head coach Mark Stoops, a good outing, and this is kind of what they've been looking at with that defense and we're expecting. So we're going to touch on that as well. As far as the Kentucky win or Tennessee win, obviously Florida gets a 38-14 win. Again, they left points on the field. They left points on the field. They could have – that game could have been in the 40s easily for Florida. Mm-hmm. You know, the defense, I think, did a nice job in some cases. I think there were other issues where, you know, again, we're going to get into some of that on the back end that Florida struggled with early. But they pitched that second half shutout again. Nice job by the Florida defense there. The offense ended up with a few points. You know, so I think – you know, when we get to the cons, I've got a couple things that I want to talk about. But my first positive coming out, it has to be your first positive as well, and that's the development of Emory Jones.
Yes, I wholeheartedly agree. I'd said to people, like, that was the – I mean, if anybody wants to dispute it, but to me, that is the best game he's played since he's been at Florida. He was the first guy since Tim Tebow to put up 200 passing yards and 100 rushing yards in a game. And I don't think – you know, he tried to force balls there, but, you know, that's what quarterbacks do. They're going to take chances and do that sometimes. But I think Emory played a really efficient game, and he didn't get rattled. And I think, like I said, best game of his career. And it's just nice to see him look like he's coming along, look more comfortable. Because you saw in those early games, you know, just his first time starting, it's a lot different dynamic than being the backup, like Dan's talked about. But this... ever since that interception against Alabama, he's looked smooth.
He really has. It was interesting because I had a conversation with a guy today about Florida and about Emory Jones specifically. And he said the same thing you did, pretty much. I mean, you know, just with in terms of that's the best game he's played. And look, we can agree it's the best game. I told him, I'm not sure it's the best half he's played. I go back to that second half against Alabama, and they come out, touchdown on the first drive, touchdown on the second drive, touchdown on the third drive. And you and I talked about this last week, 10, 11, and 12 play drives where Florida just went down the field. And one of those drives was unbelievably impressive where they started at their own 1 yard line and went all the way down. So it's interesting. You go back and you look at that second half and you couple that with what he did last night against Tennessee. And, you know, if you're a Florida fan, you have to be impressed with what you're seeing from Emory Jones.
Yeah, I think one of the big things I've taken away from it is the more use of the middle of the field. I think when we saw those first two games, it was a lot of, you know, screens out to the flat, you know, throwing the balls up on the go routes. And I don't know if that's Dan keeping things vanilla or – you know, Emory Jones just not being comfortable using that. But you saw last night the good amount of in-breaking routes, a lot of targets in between the numbers. And you know what they always say, the greats are the ones who can utilize the middle of the field the most because it's the hardest place to put a ball. And I think if Emory Jones can be, you know, efficient and can, you know, throw the ball well in between the numbers, it can only make the offense that much better because – now you have to defend the whole field in terms of patterns, and then Emory Jones can run as the dual threat.
You know, the interesting thing I thought as I was taking notes from last night's game, Jake, the second half, Emory came out, he was on fire. He threw to five different receivers in the first two series alone. I think that's something that we really needed to see at Florida because you go back to those first couple games, and I mean – you know, the tight ends weren't involved. The backs were involved a little bit. You had two wide receivers, really, maybe three, a third guy that was involved a little bit. But I think we're starting to see Emory develop in that arena as well, where, you know, different guys are getting the ball. And again, I went back and I looked at it because that was something that struck me last night. I said, he's moving the ball around, and he's, you know, kind of what Kyle Trask did last year. Now, obviously, when you got a Kyle Pitts and a Kadarius Toney, it's going to be a little bit of a game changer. They're going to get more touches. But you go back and you look at that Tennessee game, the first half, or the second half, I'm sorry, starting in the third quarter, and he pitched around to different guys were getting touches, and that's the thing that I walked away with and was pretty impressed with.
Yeah, I think, you know, you wonder whether it was something that they weren't running plays for him, or Emery just wasn't comfortable throwing the ball to him. But either way, it seems like they're getting them more involved. You know, Graham Hall made a good point to this after the Alabama game. They were doing a lot of stuff with Emory Jones that I don't think in the first two games it plays to Emory Jones' strength. I think now we're seeing a lot more stuff that's tailored to him. And I think they've just created or are running plays designed to get the ball to these guys.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, you know, the thing that's going to continue his development, if he continues to improve his accuracy, you know, last night, by far, the best game in terms of accuracy and putting the ball where it needed to be. Timing overall, I think, was pretty good. This is not a Tennessee secondary that's going to scare any good football teams, though. We got to admit that. But still, it was a very good outing by him, and a nice job. I think that the thing that is obviously going to help him, what did he have, 15 carries last night, I think?
Yeah, which Dan said was a little bit much for him.
Right. That's what I thought, too. And I thought, you know, if they can limit him a little bit more on the carries and, you know, get more touches for Pierce, who only had 8 last night, get a few more touches. You know, right now it's the 3-back system that I talked about a few weeks ago. This is what Dan Mullen does. You know, the first non-conference game or two, he's going to utilize different backs, and you're not going to see typically one back get a lot of catches unless that guy's hot. But now you're seeing where it's Malik Davis, Damian Pierce, and then that third guy coming in is Naquan Wright. We'll see what happens down the road if some other backs can get involved. But, yeah, I think 15's a bit much for Emery. I think he would ideally like to keep him around 8 to 10, probably 10. Ideally, and then have a few more of those touches go elsewhere. But, you know, that's only going to help him. I mean, he ran for 144, so he broke off several runs that were either first downs or, you know, he was within a yard or two of the marker. And that was huge for the Gators last night. But also, you know, they're going to have to defend against the run. I think a game where you get 15 like this can be a bit of a positive going into the next one, because teams start looking at it, oh, this guy's a threat to run. This guy's going to run. He'll run at any time. You know, and then maybe it opens things a little bit more in the passing game.
Yeah, I think, you know, with the – you talk about these being for first downs. Mullen talked about in his press conference the importance of converting on third down, not just to stay on the field, but because it sets you up on first down, and first down is where you get a lot of big plays, you take some shots, you do things like that. So I think, you know, just as important, if he can use his legs just to keep the drive going, it can get that, we can let them and, you know, Dan Mullen getting a little bit of rhythm, and, you know, he can have a better feel and they know when to take shots. They might end up working a lot more than they do if that happens.
Yeah. Now, the next positive I want to touch on is the offensive line. I said last week, fool's gold. Fool's gold. Tennessee, 5th best in the nation against run defense, and I wasn't buying it. Wasn't buying it at all. The competition was lousy for Tennessee in terms of going into that. Example. And I don't think I really broke all this down last week, but Bowling Green, going into this past weekend, ranked 129th in rushing defense. Or rushing offense, I'm sorry. Well, there are only 130 teams that they're ranked in. So that tells you where they're at. Tennessee Tech was 0-3 going into the weekend. So that offense hadn't scored a touchdown since week one. That tells you how bad they are. And Pitt... Remember, Pitt going into this past weekend, they had just lost to Western Michigan, where they only ran for 75 yards. So I thought that was a bit of fool's gold going into that. Florida does run for more than 200, almost ran for 300. They were at 283. But I thought this was interesting, Jake, when I looked at it. I mean, yes, Emory Jones, 144, jumps out at you. But the three-headed monster of Malik Davis, Damian Pierce, and Naquan Wright, those three guys combined nearly ran for 144. I think it was 138 or 139, if I'm not mistaken. So, again, a nice outing by the Florida offensive line to open holes, create space for not only Emory, but for Davis, Pierce, and Wright. And you saw some nice runs there. You didn't see the big home run as we've seen in a couple of these other games where these guys are running for huge yardage. But, you know, Naquan Wright did have a 23-yard run. You had a couple touchdowns by the backs. And I just think that again, you look at Pierce, who averaged nearly 8 yards a carry, and then Davis and Wright were right in line at 4.5 yards per carry. Another strong outing for the offensive line. And certainly when you look at pass protection, again, overall, not a bad job by the offensive line. I think they did a really nice job overall. And, yeah, there was a, what, Avery got sacked once, I guess, but, or Emory, I'm sorry, got sacked once. But remember, the offensive line was nicked up a bit. You had Igakwin, who was banged up clearly in the game. He had to go out. He came back. You had Josh Braun in there at right guard in for Stuart Reese. So this was a banged-up football team from that Alabama game. That Alabama game was physical. We talked about that on the last podcast. It was really physical. So really a good outing by the offensive line and those backs.
Yeah, I think it's going to be interesting to monitor what exactly is going on with Egwukan. I mean, he left the first time Egwukan left in the game. It was an ankle injury. I wonder if he made it worse or it was something else. Stuart Reese, it was weird. I remember covering it and we're like, what is Stuart Reese doing? He was just sitting on the sideline. I don't know if he's been relegated or he's dealing with an injury. Remember, but John DeLance, was hurt, and that might have played into getting Braun and Tarquin more time, but I don't know what's going on. But I agree with you, Mark. I mean, just another solid game. I think one of my favorite plays was a zone read play, or at least looked like a read play. And they have Keon Zipper as a wingback on the left side, and they bring him across on a wham block. And the offensive line, what they do is they block down to the left. And all Emory has to do is read that defensive end. And he just takes off. And it's a perfect seal and a gaping hole for the ball carrier to go through there. So I think, like you said, a really good game sealing stuff off. Cannot discredit how much value the wide receivers bring in that as well, because a lot of those plays were to the outside, and you need your receivers to block if you want to have some kind of alley when you're running the spread. So I agree with you wholeheartedly, Mark.
I love what you said about the wide receiver blocking and the tight end blocking. It has been really strong for Florida in those backs. Okay, I've just given you a couple of pros that I've seen, and of course everybody's seen the same thing. Do you have a couple more? Do you have one more that you would like to bring?
You know, thinking on it, thinking about it right now, I was impressed with how Brenton Cox played. The pass rush once again was incredibly disruptive. Times where, either they moved Hendon Hooker up in the pocket or somewhere to another lineman. But, I mean, Brenton Cox had 2.5 tackles for loss on Saturday. Probably should have got credit for a sack that Zachary Carter had, because he pushed the pocket towards Zachary Carter. So I think he's just showing the kind of talent that he's capable of showing. Looking right here, I mean, he had 4 tackles, 2.5 of them behind the line of scrimmage. And neither of them were sacks. So he was just bullying offensive linemen in that game.
Yeah.
And I also want to mention the corners who filled in for Kyer Elam. You know, Jason Marshall got the start. Avery Helm got another start again. And I think for the most part, they did a pretty good job. I mean, you had the big pass plays that are kind of inflate the pass yardage totals and the averages and all sorts of stuff like that because of a missed tackle or a busted coverage. But for the most part, I didn't see those guys get beat. I haven't rewatched it. But when nobody's worried about you, or you're not hearing a guy's name called a whole bunch, I think that's usually a good thing. And they had Elijah Blades back in there too, so it's good to see him get some more run.
Yeah, exactly. I'm glad you touched on that. And, you know, early in the game, you had the crossing routes, those shallow crossing routes that Heupel drew up, and purposely, he went right at him. He went right at him. I'm sure he saw Helm out there. He saw Marshall and said, let's test these guys, particularly with the safety play there, and see if they're ready to go.
Well, you mentioned that wasn't
a true pick play, but it was close enough to a pick play on one of them that was successful too.
Well, I think, you know, an interesting, you and I might be thinking of the same thing, but I really loved what Heupel did with the stack formation. They'd have two guys stacked up, and first guy would get jammed at the line of scrimmage. He'd take on the corner, and the next guy full on sprint right by him. And they did it twice that I can remember. One was the go route that Mordecai McDaniel got caught looking in the backfield. But the second one, they actually ran a curl out of it. So I think it's a really interesting concept. I don't know if it's just that's your basic stack, like what you're supposed to do out of it. But the way they have that top receiver engage, and then basically the bottom one is just full on sprint, and makes a guy like, you know, it almost hides him for a second and makes the whatever DB is on him kind of late to react for it.
Yeah. You know, and kind of piggybacking on something you said a little earlier, because you talked about Blades getting in there as well, even though he didn't get to start. Florida played a ton of players in this game. That was another note that I had. They had nearly 60 guys get playing time in this game, which is a pretty good bit. That's a strong amount of is getting some reps. And look, that's only going to pay dividends down the road. The things that drove you crazy, obviously, for me, number one is missed tackles. I want to go back.
How many weeks has it been now with missed tackles playing a big factor?
How about four?
Yeah.
Jeez. I looked at the Kentucky game this morning. I did not go back yet and look at the Florida-Tennessee game a second time. Before I went to church this morning, I looked back at that Kentucky game and started watching it. And I'll tell you what, there was a difference. There was some sound tackling by the Tennessee or the Kentucky defense there. And, you know, this is a problem for Florida. I want to go back when I do look at this Florida-Tennessee game here tomorrow morning, and I want to see if I can count up how many missed tackles where guys were able to go and stretch it out another yard, three, five, whatever it may be, because that's driving every fan crazy. It's got to be. It's driving you and I crazy. Got to be driving the coaches crazy. Missed tackles are a real problem.
It's got to be driving the players crazy. I mean, you know, we had Mahmoud Diabate after the game, and he was talking about how he missed a tackle, and it made him sorry that, you know, he missed it. It was like he said he was on the first drive of the second half for Tennessee, and he actually went to Christian Robinson and he said, "Hey, we got to think of some tackling drills or something." Because, you know, now that you're in season, it's really hard to dedicate time to that and play it live because of, you know, how it works and everything. And, you know, you can, you know, you get the thud practices where you're just, you know, hitting them. But you don't really have a lot of opportunity to actually tackle a guy, wrap him up, bring him to the ground. So, you know, I think there might be, you know, Diabate at least is taking the initiative to find a way to simulate it so that he does get better. And I wonder if other guys are going to take note with it too.
You're listening to the Gridiron Growl podcast. Mark McLeod and Jake Hitt with you. Remember, log on to chomptalk.com for the latest on the Florida Gators. Jake, you know, just one more quick comment on the topic here that we're talking about, discussing. You know, look, Jabari Small is a good back. Hendon Hooker, when he runs, he's a certainly a talented guy. He's a big guy. But they would not have had the yardage they had if Florida had been able to wrap those guys up. And too often, particularly with Small, they just extended drives. They just kept the chains moving there. And Florida, that's kind of my take, you know, going back to the Alabama game, going back to one of the two games earlier in the season. Florida really only ran 68 plays in this game, which Tennessee ran 68 as well. That Florida should be running, honestly, Florida should be running about 76 to 81 plays at least per game. But the missed tackles are killing this team in terms of extending those drives. So that would be my final thought on that. You know, there are a couple other cons as well. I threw mine out there. Is there one that is something that's driving you crazy that they need to get fixed, that you know, you would like to bring up here on the podcast?
I forget if you mentioned it, and that's on me for not remembering. But I don't know what's going on in the safety room, like, at all. Mm-hmm. It's just been an adventure with these guys. You know, you see flashes of some good stuff, but, you know, I it's just weird to see a guy like that just not even pay attention. It's just something they got to, you know, work on. I remember them, you know, thinking about how most of the plays that they got, that Tennessee got, that's resulted in scores or big gains, were based off of mistakes for big plays. You know, it wasn't, and it was like simple fixes. It wasn't like, you know, they were running a very complex thing that made it sort of confusing for them. It was just Mordecai McDaniel looks at the running back way too long, you know, or Rashad Torrance misses a tackle in the open field in the secondary when he's the only guy there. So, you know, things like that are, like you said, things that drive you crazy. Outside of that, you know, I don't know if it's a grievance, but it's definitely something interesting, and I asked Dan about it in the post game. A guy like Jacob Copeland, you know, you love him, love seeing a guy be hard-nosed, physical, fight for extra yards, but at what point is it almost detrimental to you? Because he has that fumble when Florida assuredly looked like it was going to score to keep the, you know, to get the lead even bigger, and he just ends up fumbling because he stays up a little bit too long.
Yeah, yeah. I would agree. That's the difficult thing to do, because you want guys to fight for additional yardage. You want them to scrap. And some, how many times have we seen guys where another guy comes in to help make a tackle, ends up knocking his own guy off, and your guy's able to run and pick up additional yardage or run downfield for a huge gain. So, I don't know. It's a catch-22. I appreciate the fighting, but, man, you've got to wrap that ball up given that situation. When you see him coming and the numbers are there, you just got to do whatever you can to wrap that ball up, because you know they're about to strip it.
Yeah.
You know, one other thing that a con for me is the slow starts. Florida's got to get off to a fast start.
I was just going to bring that up. You know, they just look sluggish coming out.
Yeah, they do. And you can't afford to do that when you're on the road at Kentucky. You know, Kentucky, no, it's not like playing in the swamp. We all get that. But it's a good football team. Mark Stoops has done a really nice job with this group, you know, of that program. Let me put it this way. You know, over the past few years, they've been pretty tough. They've been a tough out for some teams. So, you know, you can't afford to go on the road. Obviously, Florida went to USF. That was not a true road game. It certainly wasn't even comparable to what they're going to see Saturday at 6 o'clock. But I would really like to see – last two games have been difficult to watch. I really – and I know Mullen Company would like to see it as well – Florida get off to a faster start and to make some things happen where they're in control. You know, they're the ones you know, in the lead and dominating and dictating what can or can't be done.
Exactly, because, you know, the slow starts after what's gotten you, you know, in trouble. I mean, I don't think people expected that FAU game to be as close as it was at halftime. You know, the slow starts, the reason that you're down 21-3 to Alabama after the first quarter. And, you know, it's just a matter of time until, you know, you play a team and they stay with you when they're not supposed to, and they just keep gaining confidence and confidence, and it just snowballs, and eventually they end up beating you. Florida's fortunately been able to be better in the second half, and, you know, credit to Dan for being able to come up with schemes at halftime, you know, make the adjustments necessary to do it. But at some point, you know, you got to be able to play a full 60-minute game.
No question. I had somebody ask me a question that I said, you know, I'm going to throw that to Jake whenever I do talk to him, and we'll see what he's hearing. Because I don't cover recruiting. There are some things I'm going to do coming up. And it's going to maybe in a few weeks, not a couple weeks, but a few weeks. But obviously you've had the Alabama game in the swamp. You've had Tennessee. I've read a few, you know, really nice comments from some of the recruiting guys that cover it. But what are you hearing? What are you hearing anything about how the crowds, Florida football, you know, everything that they're seeing as a having a positive effect on some of these elite recruits?
You know, I think so. I think, you know, you watch that. I don't know about elite recruits, but you see stuff coming out, you know, especially in the Alabama game. You know, that environment was crazy. That's definitely something you want to play in front of, you know. And, you know, like a four-star athlete who was there said, you know, I loved how the atmosphere was, very intense. And he felt like he knew the players that were playing his position knew what they were doing, and everything looked very slow to them. You know, so I think these last two games have probably helped. It's been able to show what the environment can be like, especially with that Alabama game. But, you know, you got to be able to close on it. And I think that's the big thing is, you know, being able to steal these guys from the big-time schools.
Well, coming up, a lot of the things that we touched on are going to be enormous in the Kentucky game. And that is, number one, nothing bigger than wrap a guy up and make a tackle. You can't miss tackles. Because Kentucky is not a threat to throw the ball. Kentucky, their offense is essentially, when I watched them, and I watched them a few weeks ago in part of a game, look, they are one-dimensional offensively. They really are, and that is the ground game. You got Chris Rodriguez, who is just fantastic. He ran for 144 against South Carolina yesterday. You had Smoke. He ran for 50, but Rodriguez is the guy. He's the workhorse, and that guy's tough. He's a tough runner. They are going to have to bring him down, and they cannot allow him to break tackles and extend drives by moving past the sticks or moving past the yard marker and keep the sticks moving. In the passing game, Kentucky's horrible. Horrible. I have not seen an SEC team, I just haven't seen an SEC team this season look as bad in the passing game as Kentucky. So I think this is a huge plus for the Gator defense going into this one. But again, you've got to take care of your business, and hopefully they're healthy. Obviously, it's been 2 weeks. I think Tennessee was a pretty physical game. Certainly Alabama was very physical. So I hope we're getting and we'll have a healthier Florida team making that trip to Lexington. But you've got to bring Rodriguez down and make Kentucky, dare Kentucky to throw the ball on you and keep them as one-dimensional as positive, because that was exactly what South Carolina's game plan was. They said, I'll tell you what, we're gonna do everything we can stop the pass. Kentucky, the quarterback, 15 of 22. He threw an interception, no touchdown passes, only threw for 102 yards. So that was very unimpressive.
You know, It was interesting after week one. They were talking about Will Levis, who's the quarterback at Kentucky, and they're mentioning like, oh, Kentucky quarterback's got 4 passing touchdowns. It's not, it might be, you know, blah, blah, blah. They might be lighting it up this year. And here we are with Chris Rodriguez carrying it for like 20 times, getting 140-plus yards on the ground. And they, you know, they've always been physical under Mark Stoops, at least in the last few years, you know, with a guy like Benny Snell or Kavassier Smoke or Christopher Rodriguez, even Lynn Bowden, you know, the wide receiver turned do-it-all star for the Wildcats a few years ago. And, you know, that's only going to play into it more when you go to Kentucky. Like you said, now it's not the Swamp, but it is definitely a hostile environment when the Gators come to town. It is a very big game to them every single year. And the at least last 2 years, Kentucky has come out with its hair on fire and has grabbed the game, and Florida somehow, some way, pulls it out when Kentucky very surely should have been dominating that entire time. So, like you said, you can't afford to start the way you have the last few games because you could end up losing this one.
Yeah, you could. Look, you hit the nail on the head. That was kind of my Kentucky scouting report when I watched them this morning is, goodness gracious, that defense, they got some physical dudes over there. They really do. It's going to be a war for that Florida offensive line, the tight ends, the wide receivers. They held Kevin Harris to 38 yards and no touchdowns. That is a really nice job. Southern Cal, of course, the passing game at South Carolina is not good. I got USC on the brain. But, so the South Carolina passing game is nothing for Florida down the road to be concerned about, or anybody else for that matter. But, you know, they do have Brooks, a wide receiver, who's pretty good. But I'm telling you, they did a really nice job on South Carolina in stopping that run game, because we all know that offense at in Columbia, it begins and ends with Harris, who's a very talented back. So this is something Florida, you know, that took out of this. Obviously, very physical program, very physical team. I don't think this year, thus far, Mark Stoops has the depth that he's had 2 years ago. Remember, 2 years ago, they had some really nice depth. They had a lot of great players, too, on the front line. Last year, they had a little bit of depth, but this year, that's one thing I haven't seen yet, or I certainly didn't see it in the South Carolina game where I was really impressed with. They are definitely better than Tennessee is against the run. I don't think there's any question in what I saw. So this is going to be a fight for Florida. Emory's going to have to be on his A game in terms of passing the ball, which, again, we talked about his development. So those are some of the keys that I took from it. Kentucky offensive line, was it last year, 2 years ago, where they had that veteran group? They were really good.
That might have been the year they had Benny Snell.
Yeah, it may have been 2 years ago. But they're good. They're good. I don't think they're great, but I think they are good. I from what I saw this morning on that offensive line, I keyed in on really 2 and 3 guys who really did a nice job. I think the other two guys are kind of a work in progress. I think this Kentucky team on the line of scrimmage anyway, I think they're better than what Florida just saw against Tennessee. Now, granted, you had some injuries. The Tennessee offensive line was beat up too. And, of course, they got even more beat up in the game against Florida as the game went along.
Yeah, I think, you're trying to figure out whether that game was a referendum on South Carolina or a referendum on, you know, Kentucky. Because after they beat Eastern Illinois 46-0, South Carolina has scored 20, 13, and 10 points in their last 3 games.
Wow.
Now, granted, one of those was against Georgia, but it still counts.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think it's going to be a fun game with Florida and Kentucky. And, you know, I'm looking forward to it. Again, the key is you're on the road. Don't fall behind on the road in that stadium. You know, don't give them anything to hang their hat on or to get fired up about or to get that crowd involved in.
Don't make them think they can believe, because then that's when it happens.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. You know, now we haven't seen Florida take a lot of shots down the field of late. You know, certainly they could against FAU. They could against South Carolina, and we saw that a little bit. But you know, I got to believe Mark Stoops is going to play it, you know, and probably not. He's probably going to have those safeties. They're not going to allow Florida to go deep. They're going to cut it off. But you know that front seven, he's going to mix it up. It's going to be interesting to see how they try to stop the Florida run game. So
they usually do that. I mean, Mark Stoops, defensive coordinator by trade, he's going to have his team for the most part ready to play.
He is.
They usually have some really solid nose tackle who is just really good too.
Yeah, yeah. And I don't know who that guy is on that. You know, as I watched it, you know, you go back over the past 3-4 years for Kentucky and you could spot some guys. Josh Allen, I mean, jumped out at you.
Bud Dupree, too.
Yes, yes, an absolute freak. It's going to be a lot of fun, a lot of fun. And, you know, this is a huge week in SEC football. Good grief. Ole Miss, Alabama at 3:30. You have some monster games this week in SEC football. And really, you're going to start to see, I think, either some things settle or maybe a little bit of a shift in the West and maybe and really even in the East in terms of kind of how things are going to play out for the season.
Well, I think it's just an absolute, you know, travesty that we live in a world where, you know, we got to wake up and watch Arkansas and Georgia at noon when it should probably be a night game.
Yeah.
Like I don't like that at all. I think Arkansas is legit. I don't know about you, but
yeah.
No, we mention physical, tough, grind it out, you know, fight kind of team with Kentucky. Bro, Arkansas is the team Kentucky wishes it could be with how they play.
And yes, sir.
That game might end up being like 17-13 or something.
You know, I think, you know, down the road, because remember, Georgia has the softest schedule of anybody in the conference. I think this Arkansas game, I got to admit, before the season began, I didn't see this, but I think this Arkansas game now is going to introduce Mullen and company, Grantham, you know, they're going to introduce them to a few things that they may be able to use against the Bulldogs in a few weeks.
Well, you know, it's interesting. Barry Odom is just, you know, Barry Odom, the head coach, Barry Odom, the defensive coordinator. Holy crap. Like, he's pretty spot on. This might get him another job somewhere.
That guy's really good. He's underrated. Pittman has those guys playing well. Those Arkansas linebackers are for real. I told my buddy David Basil over there at Arkansas. He's played for them. He played linebacker for them. He's covered them for years. And he's the creator of the Broyles Award and everything. And I told him, I said, we were at SEC Media Days, and I told him, you know, these linebackers you guys have, and he just started grinning. And I was on his show with him that morning. I said, they're unreal. And, boy, they're better than I even thought they were. Across the
Bumper
board.
Bumper Pool's legit. He's been legit for years.
Yeah. But we're gonna see a settling here, you know, with the conference. But, yeah, you're right. Hey, Arkansas, those guys are for real.
Yeah. I do want to bring this up, though, because I think – this has the potential to be the absolute worst football game all season, and it is UConn and Vanderbilt at 7:30.
Yeah, that should be a barn burner. Wow.
That might be negative. That might be -5 to -2. Like,
yeah,
that's just. And then, obviously, at 9 o'clock, you have potential budding star TJ Finley against the LSU Tigers after Bo Nix got benched against Georgia State.
Yeah, I did not have Bo Nix on my all-SEC team. He was one of the first guys I scratched. I just haven't seen it, you know. mean, I just think it's going to be a great week of football. And as you said, you know, the networks want that big game at noon now. You know, a few years ago they figured that out and said, you know, we can get them locked in on ESPN here with Arkansas, Georgia. They won't turn the channel. You know, they're going to go from Arkansas, Georgia to, I guess Florida, Kentucky later at 6 o'clock. And then, of course, that night you'll have the Auburn-LSU game. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. Although I do think, look, come 3:30, a lot of people are going to be locked in CBS watching Ole Miss Alabama.
Yeah. Oh, could you imagine what could happen if Lane Kiffin pulls it off?
Wow. No, I can't. All right, that's going to do it for me. Again, everybody, chomptalk.com. You are listening to the Gridiron Growl podcast. Mark McLeod, follow me on Twitter at McLeod Live, MCLEOD Live. You can also check out my other podcast, The Gator Blitz. I'm going to throw it to Jake and let Jake send it out of here, but with a prediction. You know, I think Florida wins this game, but I think it's going to be very difficult, and I think it's going to be a bit closer than certainly that Tennessee game. I don't really have a score in mind. But I'll say, let me just say Florida by 8. And that may be a bit generous, but I'll go Florida by 8.
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, with you, Mark, it's going to be your regular Kentucky heart attack game, in my opinion. Just the way it seems to be shaken out, which could make it also even, you know, more likely we see a very anticlimactic game. But I do think Florida can pull it out just because, you know, of the fact they've been able to do it before. And Emory Jones is a battle-tested guy, and I don't think he'll be as rattled going into that game. But, yeah, that's for me. I'm Jake Hitt. You can find me at Jake_Hitt06 on Twitter. Check out my work at Inside the Gators. And also be sure to check out Grading the Gators. That'll be up as well on chomptalk.com. For Mark McLeod, I'm Jake Hitt. See you later.